Now, NDE Radio, a weekly exploration of near-death experiences and similar encounters with the other side. Now, here's your host, Lee Whitting.
Welcome to NDE Radio with Lee Whitting, whether you're listening on TalkZone, by podcast, through the archives of our ad-free shows on our YouTube channel, or by connecting through our Facebook page. We're once again approaching October 4th, St. Francis Day, when we do the blessing of the pet therapy dogs at our local hospital. And it crossed my mind that the Rainbow Bridge story describes pets waiting for their owner's death so they can enter heaven together. But what about the ghosts? We have reported on the ghosts of pets who appear to their still-living owners from time to time. But what about human souls who don't progress toward heaven, but stick around on earth for a while in ghostly form? Can their loving, deceased pets join them in ghostly form until the two of them are ready to cross into the light? The thought reminded me of an interview we'd done on an early show with Janice Goff, a frequent guest on NDE Radio, who was blessed with various psychic gifts, including many encounters with ghosts. In this interview, Janice talks about a haunted hotel in Jerome, Arizona, with a famous ghost cat, while Janice has seen human ghosts there as well. Are ghost cats actually the pets of ghost humans? At a wild burro roundup, where Janice and other volunteers were trying to save wild burros from being shot from government helicopters, Janice tells of another famous haunted hotel as well, with many ghost cats and a child ghost who visited with the burros that they had rounded up. Enjoy.
For as long as there's been written history, the appearance of ghosts and spirits from the other side have been recorded as real events that happen on a regular basis in our world. On a recent trip to Jerome, Arizona, for example, I stopped at the Grand Hotel, which once served as the hospital to a mining operation, and therefore was a place where many people had died. The desk clerk showed me the journal entries written in their own hand by guests who saw or heard something ghostly. One recurring vision was of a ghost cat who walks through bedroom doors to visit travelers during their stay there overnight. Our guest today is Janice Goff, a friend of ours who has been on NDE Radio in the past. Janice is a gifted experiencer with a talent for photographing apparitions not usually seen by others. Janice, welcome back to NDE Radio.
Good morning, Lee. Thank you.
It's good to have you here. You were telling me some amazing stories about haunted hotels you've seen, and I thought we might start with the one in Jerome, where I know your son worked, and then we'll go to Amargosa.
Okay. The hotel in Jerome, yes, Matthew worked there, and he was younger back then, like 12, 13, 14, 15, in that age group, and he constantly told me stories about the cat that would come in and go from room to room, through the walls, through the doors, and he would follow him and never see him once he went into the rooms. But I went to pick him up one day, and the hotel sits high up on a hill with a little windy dirt road, and I turned the corner and was coming up to the hotel, and there's this woman standing on these huge antebellum steps that's at the end of the hotel. She's in this emerald green dress with puffy sleeves, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, well, they must be having an event going on. And as I got a little, she just disappeared. I mean, she just disappeared into thin air. I drove on up to the hotel kind of with my mouth open, thinking, oh my God, you know, this woman with long red curly hair, and she was gorgeous. But that she just wasn't there, you know, so there was no event.
Now, you said she looked very solid. Was this during the day or at night?
Yes, she did look very solid. In fact, I thought they were having some sort of event going on, and this was in the daytime.
In the daytime, wow. So I wonder what kind of, have you ever thought about what kind of energy it must require for a ghost to appear like that?
You know, after taking all the photos that I've taken and explored through myself, how this can happen. I'm used to the information that I've gathered, how spirits, it doesn't matter what kind of body you live in. If you're in a dimension, like a third dimension, we use third dimension objects so that we can see each other. So you use a third dimension body so that I can see you. I use one so that you can see me. And if we didn't have a third dimension body, we would have to use the other attributes on Earth, such as the plants, smoke, glass reflections, all of those sort of things, so that we could see each other, or we could see them either. But in these cases where, you know, the bodies are so solid and there is no reflection, there is no physical attributes for them to kind of pull together to give me an image of who they are, facial or body or whatever, I don't have a clue. I know that there's many technical scientific things that, you know, the ghost hunters and all these people that do spiritual work have put together about this, but I don't study those things. I want that information to come through myself so that it comes through my own brain, through my own language. So far, Lee, I haven't gotten anything on how this actually happens, that these spirits can be so solid. And I think in the past we've talked, I have a picture of my father that is solid in the photo. He's not an apparition where you can see through him. And I've had contacts with other people who have died who are solid. But I haven't, you know, I have not gotten information of how this happens. I think it must be a tremendous amount of caring, love, whatever it takes to get them into our dimension as a solid.
Mm. Love, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was thinking force or willpower, but I think you're right. It's probably love that gives them the ability to materialize like that. Well, maybe we could move on. Tell us that whole story about Amargosa. It's fascinating why you were out there in the first place and what you saw.
Oh, my goodness. Amargosa Hotel was built in the 20s by the Borax Mining Company to house the workers. And it's built in a horseshoe, well, kind of a U-shape, square U-shape. And then behind it, there is another row of cabins where they also housed. And this hotel also housed an infirmary, a hospital. From what I understand, they had places for altars, you know, and things like that for their church stuff going on. I went out there, and I was invited in, I think, Lee, it was either in 98 or 2001, and I can't remember the date specifically. I didn't have cameras back then, so I didn't take a camera with me. Anyway, I was invited out there for a borough roundup. The BLM was shooting the boroughs that are non-indigenous to the area from the helicopters, and went out with I was invited to go out with a group to do a borough roundup and bring boroughs back to Arizona. Was out there 2 weeks, and basically what I didn't know was a lot. I didn't know anything about Death Valley, didn't know anything about Amargosa Hotel. I had only been in Arizona a short time, and that was all new information, new territory, new locale for me. So went out there, and immediately the very first day seemed to walk into some sort of interdimensional kind of thing where, you know, I just began to see shadows and images and people walking out of the side of my eyes, you know, how your peripheral vision. And I thought, oh, well, you know, the first night I stayed in a cabin with the group that was behind the hotel, and we had pens behind that row of cabins for the burros, and they had already brought some burros in. I was on watch that night because we have a lot of tourists that come, and, you know, they're there trying to see and mess with the burros all the time. So I was on watch all night. I heard something outside and went out back to take a look, and there was a little girl leaning over the fence with her head through the fence looking at the burros. She had on this little white gown. I could see from the back she had a little bobsy haircut, little black hair. She looked like she was maybe 10, 11, 12 years old, just a real petite little thing. And I said, "Oh, no, come back." And she turned and looked at me and just faded away, just disappeared. And I'm like, "Oh, my goodness." Okay, so I came back inside and went back to bed. Well, the next day, I was talking to Marta Beckett, who actually owns the Amargosa Hotel. And Marta, you know, I told her about the little girl, and she said, "Oh, well, you know, her mother drowned her when she was 12 years old in the cabin that you're staying in." I'm like, okay, geez, I mean, that sort of set the stage for a whole 2 weeks of just a massive onslaught. And it was a mental torque because you don't know what's real and what's not real, because these things were so solid, you know, it's in your brain, in your eyes, in your mind, and eventually goes into your heart, and it causes a real conflict to have to stay in that environment.
And what were some of the other things? Obviously, the owner of the hotel was well aware that these things were happening on a regular basis.
Oh, yes. Marta is very aware that happened. She is very inspired, I think Marta is a portal herself, and her plays that she has done at the Opera House, you could quite often see all kind of things happening as she's doing her ballet.
Tell us a little about the background of the owners and what they did to entertain the guests.
Marta was a ballet dancer. Her and her partner, Tom, they were actually from Hollywood, and she was traveling in Death Valley, ended up having a flat tire. And, you know, 30, 50 miles around, there's no place. So, there's no gas station. So she was wandering around there at Amargosa and stuck her head in one of the windows of this vacant building and saw this, what's now called the Opera House, and she ended up purchasing that and restoring it. It was in massive destruction and had been flooded and all kind of stuff. She's painted the whole inside of the Opera House and the hotel with all of her guests, and it's Renaissance paintings. It's very beautiful. She spent years doing that. The ceilings, the walls are all covered with her guests, and it's very beautiful, and it's very surreal. And Marta now, I think Marta's probably in her 90s now, and she completed her last ballet play. I think it was last year, actually, that she completed that last play. And another gal now is doing her play as a memoir for Marta. And Marta's failing a little bit. She's having physical problems, so she doesn't quite often come to the plays. But once in a while, she'll stick her head in to sign autographs and things like this. But during that 2 weeks, I was able to visit with Marta quite a bit, and she had, oh, my goodness, she must have had 300 cats there that she fed, and she constantly talked. She only had two cats in her house that were her favorite, her family cats. But she had many, many ghost cats that she also set bowls out for. And she knew the history, you know, of Amargosa quite well. So, you know, every time something happened, I ran to Marta's house and knock, knock, you know. And one night, I guess we'd been there 3 or 4 days, and we were all pretty exhausted by then. And that was real early on in our stay, but we were all working really, really hard. And all night long, we had knocked. People, someone knocking on the door of the cabin we were in, and needless to say, not one of us would get up and go open that door and see who was there. There had just been so many things happen that, you know, it was almost like in the middle of the night, you're in this dilapidated cabin, you just don't want to know what's on the other side of that door, you know. We just didn't go there. Barb Zog from the Hacienda de los Milagros, the animal sanctuary in Chino, stayed with me all day long while the rest of the group went out to round up the burros. So Barb and I just continuously tried to keep our balance and, you know, tried to make do through this whole scenario of unusualness that neither one of us were prepared for. We were standing, there's a little dirt road running in front of the cabins, between the cabins and the back of the hotel, and we were walking. I think we were might have been getting ready to go do laundry or something, and walked out to the edge of the road to cross that little road, and we were going to see Marta's emus. That's what we were going to go do. And looked, and there was four men running down the road coming our direction. And I said, oh, my God, Barb, back up. They're not going to stop. Back up. Watch out. And as fast as I said that, it was whoosh, they went right through us. And left us standing there in a blur. Now, that's the closest I've ever come to actually feeling myself, that spiritual energy run through you from, you know, being in that close of contact. And I assume that that's probably what people experience who do medium work, and probably experience that a lot. But it leaves you knowing that, in fact, pregnant women can feel that as well. You are carrying another spirit in your body. And there is a feeling that goes with that that you wouldn't get, but it's very, very similar to what I experienced standing there when they flew through us. There was a leftover feeling of knowing that I had another spirit inside of me, you know, briefly at least. So, oh gosh, Lee. And one late afternoon, and we're the only ones at the hotel. All of us for the Burro Roundup, and then of course Barb and I. During the day, we were the only two other people. Vicki worked the desk, and she was there every day. And then, of course, Marta was there, but Marta stayed in her home, and, you know, she had a life going on, so she was preparing for her plays every weekend and that sort of thing. So Barb and I went over to, we walked through the hotel. Barb wanted to go take a shower and definitely didn't want to go by herself. So I went over with her, and I'm wandering around in the hall while Barb's in there taking a shower, and she's constantly hollering, "Hey, Janice, are you, hey, you know, and talking to me to make sure that I'm still there. So I walked out into the hall just because I was bored, and there was a young man in the hall, and he was coming my direction. So I said, well, good morning. And he said, good morning. And he said, are you enjoying your stay here? I said, yes, we are. It's been very unusual. We're working hard. But yes, and, you know, and I would like to come back at some time. He said, yes, you will. And he turned and walked on, and I immediately went to the desk, and I said, Vicki, who's, I thought we were the only ones here. I just met a young man in the hall, and she said, with khaki pants and a black and red shirt, long blonde hair. And I said, yeah. And she said, well, that was Stephen. He died in Florida in the late 30s. He worked here at the mine after it was open in the 20s. And he loved it here so much that he continually comes back and tells our visitors that he hopes that they enjoy their stay here. And I'm like, okay, this is, you know, it was just way a lot. There was no indication whatsoever I was looking through a non-solid person. And you know, rationally, Lee, you don't carry on conversations like that. How are you doing? You know, what are you up to? Casual conversations with ghosts. Generally, we don't do that. You know, that's...
Was his voice strange, or was it very normal?
He totally, totally solid, totally normal. Walked off down the hall, and I turned and went the other way.
Wow. What did your friend say when she got out of the shower?
I asked Barb when she came out of the shower, when she went into the from the bathroom to the bedroom, because I had went back in there. I said, Barb, did you see anybody in here? She said, no. Was somebody here? I said, well, not in here then. And I told her about him in the hall, and she said, well, let's go talk to Vicki. So that's when we went down to Vicki and got the rest of Stephen's story.
Wow. Now, was your friend able to see as much as you could?
She saw the men coming down the road, and we were both able to, actually, I drew some pictures of them sometime way back then, from her description, and totally matched my own. One night, early evening, it was just getting dark, and the only phone at that place, back then I didn't have a cell phone, she didn't either, so it was around the end of the building where there used to be a ice cream shop. So we went around the end of the building, got her to the phone, and I came back into the courtyard area in the front and sat on the porch. And as soon as I sat down, and I just sat down and looked up, and I'm like, oh my God, we're going to a wedding. And I hollered immediately to Barb, hurry up. We're going to a wedding.
what did you see?
I saw the hotel doors were open. A huge double line, very long double line of men, and they were all kind of cleaned up and slicked down, and they were holding candles, and they were standing, you know, after each other. And at the head of this line was the bride, and she had on this long white dress with this comb style of hat. Instead of a veil, it was like a cone sitting on her head with a fluffy stringer off the end of it. I know there's a name for that. It looked very, kind of Renaissance sort of in my mind. Mm-hmm. She came running around the building and stood there with her mouth open. And she said, what? And the whole image just sort of faded into the evening. And we just kind of stood there. You know, I'm still sitting on the porch, and she came and sat down, and we just sat there in silence for a while. There just had been so many things happen that we couldn't shift very quickly from one image, you know, to another. And then we had to go back to those cabins. And, of course, you know, out there in the middle of the desert, there are no lights. You're in total, total pitch dark. So everything that's illuminated in the night is illuminated by its own energy. And, you know, of course we had flashlights and things like that, but, you know, when you see something in the night, it's illuminated by its own energy. So you don't sleep a lot. You work really hard. You don't sleep a lot. You try to take care of business. That's all left brain stuff. And in the meantime, you've got all this non-third dimensional right brain stuff that's going on. It was a hard transition to make, and a hard experience to live through. We were totally exhausted when we left there.
I wonder if the Burroughs sensed anything special about the place.
You know, they, because they live there, and mm-hmm. I never saw anything actually. The only thing I saw that gave me any indication that they were aware was there were two Burroughs at the fence when the little girl was there, and uh-huh. their heads were at the fence where she was. That's the only indication that I had, you know,
that they were aware
of that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because if you could see her, then they probably could see her too.
That's what I assumed. And, you know, I think what really shocked me is that coming back to Arizona in the days and weeks later, I had told different people that I was going there and whatnot. I got some emails about Amargosa, and I'm totally shocked. I had no idea this place had been so heavily documented and so heavily researched for paranormal activity. You know, the voice recordings, the research and photographic documentation that's taken place there over the years it was like a hot spot, and it's been featured on many, you know, the documentary. Well-known, National Geographic, History, on and on and on. Very well-known.
My thanks to Janice Goff for this and all the stories she shared with us on NDE Radio. If you'd like to hear this show again or any of our more than 500 archived, ad-free NDE interviews, go to TalkZone's NDE Radio site and hit the Past Shows button, or go to our YouTube channel, NDE Radio with Lee Whitting, where you can subscribe to and comment on the complete NDE radio library. And listen next Monday, 11 a.m. Eastern at TalkZone for more NDE radio. I'm your host, Lee Whitting, saying once again, thanks for listening.